Welcome to the Universal Sisterhood podcast. We're hoping to create a place where women can delve deeper, lift their gaze higher, live freer, laugh louder, smile brighter, be the authentic woman they were designed to be. Every human heart is created to be known, loved, and understood. So this is the place where women can share their stories. Welcome to episode 13. Today on the podcast, I'm talking to a very dear friend of mine who has suffered twice with postnatal depression. She is a mother of four and a current psychology student. She has gone on from strength to strength, battling through life's adversities and never giving up hope. She challenges our perception of depression and that life does go on afterwards and can go on successfully. And she is just amazing. Statistically, I was looking, the World Health Organization says that 13% of women experience a mental health disorder. Of that, primarily, it is postnatal depression. I hope you can see light at the end of the tunnel if you're experiencing these kind of symptoms. And as Yvonne says, please don't self-diagnose. It is serious and you do need help. And don't think that your symptoms are similar. Like if you think you have similar symptoms to her, doesn't always mean that you've got postnatal depression. Please seek help and seek medical advice. There are postnatal two-minute tests that you can look up online. Yvonne also gives me a little app that she uses. I'll put all this in the show notes. So have a listen to my brave friend, Yvonne. Welcome to the podcast, Yvonne.
Thanks, Jess.
Thank you so much for coming. It's so lovely to have a beautiful, friendly face.
Thanks, Jess. Nice to be here.
Good. Could you give us a bit of background
information
about yourself?
So I'm married with a husband, of course, and four children from 16 down to 6, mm-hmm. And living in the Blue Mountains in Western Sydney, and I'm studying at the moment too, so that's, I can talk to you a bit about that later. But yeah, so I've had experience with mental health issues. We just dive right in, I think.
Yeah, go for it. There's no time like the present.
No. So after my first baby and my fourth baby, I've had a manic and a depressive episode. So with Claire, so that was in the end of 2002, I was just progressively getting sicker and
sicker as in?
I was kind of up all night, not sleeping very much. I'd already been diagnosed with depression earlier that year, so just before she was born. And then by the end of the year, she and I had to go to hospital because basically I was up all night and progressively becoming more and more manic. I can see it now, but at the time it didn't seem to me like that.
Especially being at first, you don't know.
You don't know what's normal, yeah. So by the time it was time to go to hospital, basically I can laugh about it now, but at the time it was quite serious. I was planning this massive Scanlon family ball and I was going to have it at Terrigal, at the Crown at Terrigal. And I'd actually met Matthew Hayden on a plane. My husband and I had met him, and just this whole idea and my racing thoughts and this plan of having this massive ball and inviting all these celebrities and everything.
Who's Matthew Hayden?
He used to be Australian cricket batter.
So was he going to MC it or?
I didn't know. I just wanted to have this massive event, but it just became like I'd got information, I'd got prices, like it was just progressing.
So could your husband see this unraveling, or he just thought you wanted a ball?
I think he could see it unraveling because if he started to critique anything about it, it was the end of the world. It was just, it's my baby kind of thing. Yeah. But looking back now, it was really the beginning of the end kind of thing. So by the time I'd got to hospital, I had to go to St. John of God, and they have a mother and baby unit there, which is great, and it's all set up for, you know, particularly postnatal depression, all of that. But I ended up being in there probably for 2.5 months with Claire with me, then home for Christmas, and then back in again for another 2 months. So basically I was so high and so manic that they had to just use their big guns to bring me down. So I was on lithium, put on a heap of weight in a really short period of time, had to stop breastfeeding, which I
That's hard. When
I had to really be counselled through it, because I really enjoyed it, and it was a real kind of connection with Claire, especially as I was getting worse. But the way they described it and said, you know, that if you're on a plane, what do you do? Do you put the oxygen mask on your child first, or do you put it on yourself first? And so, you know, my instant thing was, no, you actually have to put it on your child first. It's like, no, because
you can't help them.
You can't help them if you're not. Yeah, that's right. So that was the big thing of putting the oxygen mask on myself to take to be able to have the medication and to stop breastfeeding so that I could have as much as I needed, or, you know, they could play around with it and not affect Claire. So there was that episode. And then after I became well, you know, it was a long, long time of becoming well and playing around with different medications to see what would work. And I didn't have any other like a hyper or a manic episode after that.
So how long
after? It was mostly just the depression.
So you've been in hospital 4 months. And then you're back home.
And so then I was quite stable for a while with lots of support, seeing the psychiatrist quite regularly. And so then we had a 5-year gap between children. So then
So you, in those 5 years, no flare-ups?
No. No. So I was just stable and no manic episodes. And then I ended up having Dominic. So he was 2007, and then Helena 2009. And I was fine. After both of those pregnancies, there was no kind of episode. I just stayed on my medication. Then after Zach, so Zach was born in 2012, and basically they'd kind of, I just got really, really depressed after him. I'd had just a lot of struggling with motherhood and obviously two other small children, and it just became evident that I was going to have to go back to hospital again.
Did you feel, was it doom? Did you feel like, oh, here we go again?
I think I was so bad that I didn't really care. I didn't really care. I knew I just wanted to drive my car off the road. That's how.
I was going to say, I don't know if you want me to share this, but I remember when you came over that day and you sat here at where we're sitting now. Yep. And you looked at me and you said, I just want to drive the car off the bridge.
Yep.
And I said, no, you can't. Leave the kids here. You need to go home. You need to go and rest. Well, I didn't know. First story. All I knew was
that I wasn't
You weren't well and you needed help. And you need I just thought you're sleep deprived.
And I guess a lot of it comes down to that as well. And just that real, you know, being up, feeding the baby, it's just the days and days and days of doing that. It just takes its toll, I think. And
especially self-care, like we're not really, we're kind of like give of yourself all the time, and you just don't think, I need time for myself. You kind of think that's being a bit selfish, or you should prioritize the children, but you know I think a lot has to be said for self-care.
Absolutely I'll talk about that a bit later too.
Good.
But so then after Zach, so that was the end of 2013, and it was actually it was the baby health nurse who she kind of picked up that something wasn't right.
Did she know your history?
No, she didn't.
Wow.
She didn't. But she, just with my permission and with my husband's permission, she got the mental health team to come and see me, and sure enough, I was really quite bad, in a bad place.
Mm.
So back to hospital again with Zach, back to the same unit at St. John of God, and this time, because they pretty much exhausted the kind of drugs that I could use, they wanted to try ECT. Now, for those of you who don't know, that's electroconvulsive therapy, so that means every day for 7 days for 3 weeks, having your brain zapped with electricity. Now, at the time, it seemed like the only kind of option because we were, you know, I was in such a bad place. But looking back, I mean, you can't make the same decision in hindsight because you...
No.
It's hard. Like, you know, we had a new baby, we had 3 other kids, we just did what we could and under the advice that we were given.
You put your trust in the doctors.
That's right. That's right. But I have such loss of memory, like, around that time and such patchy kind of experiences about being in hospital and still patchy now. Like, I can joke about it now, but my husband will say, oh, do you remember we did that? I'll be like, no. He said, that's the ECT. And sometimes I'll turn to him and say, oh, hello, and we'll just pretend and joke that, you know, I've just come to life again or something.
Because I visited you. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that. Was that St. John of God?
Yeah, I came 3 times in a row, and each time you didn't remember that I had been there before. And
I don't remember that.
I remember going up to the kitchen, to the dining room upstairs.
Yeah.
And you didn't know who I was. No.
So bizarre. So, I mean, I knew who my husband was, and I think I knew who my kids were. I think I had other people, I think, you know, other people were coming to visit, but, you know, they'd tell me, and I, afterwards, you know, 6 months later, I'd be like, I have no recollection of it at all. I'm so sorry.
Maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Maybe I said something really horrible.
It was such a dark time, and
I didn't say anything horrible, by the way.
I'm sure you didn't. I'm sure whatever you said was very comforting. But yes,
just shows you it's not in the words, is it?
No.
It's the prayers.
That's right. So then came through that, and then beginning of 2014, I was really depressed again, and that was really bad again. And this time we didn't have private health insurance, so I had to go into the public system, which, I mean, looking back, it was pretty bad, but it's something. It's better than nothing. I was on, like, 7 different drugs, and my doctor was just, like, he was just kind of masking symptoms. Like, a symptom would come up and then he'd put me on something else and then another symptom and then he'd just.
And where's your say in this? Do you have, suppose you're just like a sheep following?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess you're feeling so bad that you just want things to be better.
Yeah.
And if medication can offer that hope, and it does, it does offer that hope that things will be better. And fortunately, going into this place, the public place, I had, like, the staff specialist, he was like, so basically they stopped everything to see what symptoms were left and then just work with whatever was left. So, and they told me at the outset, they said, look, it's probably going to be like 6 weeks. And sure enough, I was in, I think, 6.5 weeks. I was in there. I do remember you coming to visit me then, Jess. I do remember that. I remember she came to pick me up in the Patmobile, in the black Patmobile, and I think probably 6 months pregnant, getting into the Patmobile with her stilettos belly. On. Yeah, I belly, stilettos. Yeah, like belly and high heels or something. So
we had a coffee somewhere.
Yeah, and she bought me, like, nuts and berries and things from the fruit shop, which I thought was just Christmas because there was all the food at the hospital was rubbish.
That's right. I remember.
That was nice.
Yeah, but someone had, never mind.
Yes.
There's a hole in the brand new door.
That's right. We were in the brand new unit and someone had already just chucked a spaz and thrown a chair across the room. But that was a whole other experience being in there. But basically they stopped everything. I was in there for 6.5 weeks, and it was actually quite a really blessed time, because even though husband was at home with the 4 kids and my mum was staying and whatever, I was able to get the chaplain to bring me communion almost every day.
Oh, because it's close too, wasn't it? Yeah. It wasn't so far away.
No. So I had communion almost every day, and I'd just spend the day in my room, because basically the setup there is just the TV's on all the time, and if you're out in the dining room, the TV's on, and it's just
distractions.
That relentless, but I just couldn't stand it. I needed just peace and quiet.
Mm.
And so I basically just spent most of my time in my room, and I was reading.
Did they have an outdoor area?
They did, yeah, but most of the people smoked out there, yeah. So it wasn't all that amazing. Yeah. But,
see, maybe that's, you know, that's, you need something uplifting, some form of beauty.
Yeah, a distraction.
Yeah, but something beautiful to kind of lift your gaze.
Yeah. Like, well, I was reading what I could.
Mm. Maybe we should.
I was reading Miracles of Lourdes, which was beautiful. Healing Fire from Frozen Earth, that was beautiful. And The Shadow of His Wings. Have you read that?
No.
It's about this priest. This priest who he was a German priest, and he ministered to the soldiers, and yeah, it's really beautiful. But it gave me hope, because obviously these people who were suffering and the Miracles of Lourdes were, you know, just ordinary people going to Our Lady, asking for help and asking for a healing, and then the post, you know, having to do all the medical investigations and everything after to be able to say that the healing actually happened. Yeah.
Mm.
So
how does your faith journey go on? How does it develop? Does it get pushed aside, or does it grow?
Well, it's funny, being in St. John of God, we had the Blessed Sacrament very close by. And I don't remember this, but apparently the time when I had the ECT, I like rearranged the room and stuff
the chapel.
To make it like everything kind of focus on Our Lord, and to like move the chairs all around and did all of this stuff just to make the chapel look nice. How does my faith go? I think I never blamed God. It was always just He's with me, and there's nothing that He can give me that I wouldn't be able to handle, or that that together we wouldn't be able to handle. Mm. And
are there moments of anger and like
sometimes yes, because I think sometimes because now having to because of not work, I was a nurse before when I first got married. I worked for a year in Gosford Hospital, and I always thought that I'd go back to nursing. And so after having not worked for 10 years, being told that I had to do my whole degree again, and really I was never really in a place to just go and, you know, they said, oh, you could just work a couple of shifts a week. I was never really in a place to do that. I never kind of had the strength to go and, you know, find a job and do that. So I think if there's any anger, it's mostly about that. It's about the unfairness of having done a degree and it basically being worthless and not being able to do that. So and for my kids too, like I think for my oldest daughter, I think it's probably hit her the hardest because she
missed out on her mum for so long.
Yeah, and had to endure that. So I think that's probably it's not so much anger with God. It's mostly just anger about those things and I guess the inconvenience of it.
Mm.
And
but how do you draw hope from something like that? I guess
these things happen for a reason. And my mum's friend told us once that if you haven't suffered, you're useless.
Well, you're definitely not useless. There goes that not being useful in your job.
Yeah. So that you, so from suffering, you're able to help other people. Yeah. And so, so now, like, just to catch you all up, so from now, so from almost, actually, I thought it was quite funny. I was in a psychiatric hospital in 2014, and by the end of 2014, I'd signed up to do psychology, and I was actually studying psychology in the same year that I'd actually been in the hospital. I thought it was quite hilarious.
That's fantastic.
But, yeah.
What better advice can you give people if, you know, you've gone through it, you know exactly how to do it.
So now I'm studying again and partway through doing a graduate diploma in psychology, and it's really given me like a purpose and a bit of a structure and a bit of hope, I guess. Mm. And I guess for my kids to see too that I'm well and I'm functioning and...
You're more than functioning, you're blossoming. Yeah.
Oh, sometimes I wonder. Sometimes I feel like, oh, my gosh, you know, like, I have to be careful because if I... It's a very kind of delicate window, like of, you know, like it's probably for everybody. You know, you tip a little bit too much over the edge and it's just too much.
Well, you won't be organising your daughter's formal. Let's just
No, I won't be doing that. Or I won't be doing, or hosting a Scanlon family ball anytime soon.
when they ask, who do you think we should, I don't know.
No, I'm not doing that, no. Too many triggers for that.
And you're not going to the cricket.
Mm. Yeah. So, it's funny, but it's...
So what are the warning signs, or were there any? Just the fact that you were spiraling, tired, not coping.
Yeah. Just not... I didn't want to...
Heaviness.
...be with my baby. Mm. I think for the first time I didn't, like... For Claire, when the early time, I didn't want to be with her. Everything was just so hard and
always exhausted or not.
I mean, these are
common symptoms for a new mum anyway, the tiredness, but it was more than that.
Yeah, it was more than that. It was just a dark, dark time and just, you know, not finding joy in anything, just a real heaviness all the time.
What about... the relationship with your husband?
It's funny because we kind of coined this phrase, who cares for the carer? Mm. And so because he was basically caring for me, you know, like through it all, and we came to the conclusion that the cared has to care for the carer, because I have to say, okay, you can go and have some time on your own now or whatever, or, you know, letting him have time out. But, I mean, I guess our relationship through it has been, he's been just the rock, really. Oh, like he hasn't and I often look at him and think, oh, my gosh, you know, like it's really taken its toll on him. And we sought counsel, you know, all the other kids are like, oh, we have to have more children, and there's still that risk of having like a psychosis after a baby. So it's a real kind of risk for us that we don't have the resources to be able to go down that track again, I don't think. And
that's why, you know, that's good that you're able to sort through that.
Yeah, and like the priest that we talked to, beautiful Opus Dei priest, he said, you know, that just look after the beautiful gifts that God's given you and, you know, focus on them. And, you know, four kids is a full-time job. I mean, in our circles, four is a small family, but, you know, it's busy and it's good.
It's hard.
It's busy, it's good, it's hard.
And you have to rewarding. Look after yourself.
That's right.
And do you now prioritize yourself?
I have to. Try and walk every day. You know, I mean, try and take out
things,
time.
Isn't it? Go and have a facial or have a day spa. It's just
it can just be reading outside. The favourite book that you want to read for 10 minutes in the sun, or you know, having a cup of tea.
Yep. Uninterrupted.
So, and Chris and I too, we try and just sit out the front and have a cuppa in the afternoon and catch up. And you know, the kids aren't allowed to come out; they have to stay inside or, you know, go out the back themselves. But yeah, I think self-care, I think as mothers, We are often the bottom of our own list.
Hmm.
You know, everything else has to be done. And I'm preaching to myself as well because, hmm. you know, if the kids have got doctor's appointments or whatever, that all gets done.
But you keep putting. I mean, I'm the same. Yeah. I've got to do it. Have a mammogram, and I keep putting it off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking. Last night I was lying in bed thinking, I haven't even done it. It's been a month now. I was meant to do it last month. I'll ring today.
At the end of this thing, we're going to book a mammogram. But it's true. Like, it's so hard to. And I haven't had a very good example either. My mum just puts herself last in everything, and
I mean, it sounds heroic, but it's not always a good thing.
No,
is it?
It's not. It's not because you can't give from an empty cup. You can't if you've got nothing.
Yeah.
You can't. You just have to trim back things and do the essential. You know, sometimes it's just doing the essential day in, day out. We don't have family nearby, so we, you know, don't have that much support in terms of helping with the kids, but you know, we rely on screens and TV probably a bit more than what we should. But,
oh, look, don't.
You know, we.
Do you know where my son is right now?
Hello, Harry. yeah, so I think we. I think to go to the other extreme, I think most mothers probably never go to the other extreme of, you know, being indulgent and all of that. But I think just basic looking after yourself and taking time out for yourself and your husband. Like,
yeah.
I know, Jess, you're amazing at this, and I know you like say to the kids, you know, they said, where are you going tonight? It's like, I'm going out with my boyfriend.
Yeah.
Going out on a date.
Yeah, we're going out on a hot date.
Date night.
One night, I'd just like to say, our date was to Bunnings.
Bunnings!
Yep. We had to get stuff for the house, and I said, well, we can't do it on the weekend because we had something on. And I said, it's date night. We may as well go to Bunnings with a bottle of wine. We sat in the car park.
Walked around Bunnings. Oh, well, you take it where you can. I remember you saying that Pat took a beer to Aldi one day when you were doing your Aldi shopping.
I said, what are you doing?
Just bringing a bit of sparkle to Aldi, you know, a bit of public drinking just while I'm picking up the bread and milk. So, I think.
We have been known to be in the movies with a hip flask. And we're not alcoholics.
No. Just taking some of life's pleasures when you can, I think. Yeah. So, I think self-care. I think self-care for mums, even just simple little things that can bring you joy and just make you feel like you again. You know, you're stripped back of all the roles. You're not the mum. You're not the wife. You're not the. You're just you.
Did you feel kind of that lose you've yourself. Lost yourself?
I have. I think I feel like I have.
And do you feel that you're coming back?
I do. I feel. I think through my faith, I've been trying to go to daily mass and, you know, doing the rosary every day and trying to take time for prayer. That, like, it just feels like a big fog in some ways. Mm. And here I am. We often say to each other, my husband and I, you know, do you know we've got four kids? Like, it just kind of feels surreal sometimes, even though they're, you know, 16 to 6. But
they've definitely been around for a while.
Yeah, they've been around for a while. Yes.
I think that too sometimes. Oh, my goodness, they're all mine.
Yeah, yeah.
When did that happen?
Yeah. And, you know, I think just spending time with them and investing in their life and being mum to them, you know, it's just so beautiful and wonderful, and they just look up to you. And
do you appreciate things more, like the little things more now that you're starting to find yourself again?
Yeah, I think I do. Even just reading something that I'd like to read that's not related to uni or mothering or anything that's nice. And even finding out what my likes are, even finding out what my interests are, like just started growing a few veggies and stuff at home, and just finding things that that bring you life and bring you know, happiness. And so
that's beautiful.
I think that's it.
Do you have any advice for people who might be feeling a bit down or not a bit, like might be on the same trajectory that you were on?
I think if you're feeling down, just talk to your GP about you know, what you're feeling, or your husband first, if that's something you can do. But just talk to someone, because there's lots of support and there's lots of help out there. And I think it does, it kind of goes in waves. Like, I found this, it's like a meme or a like an info thing. I might even, I'll give you the link, Jess. And
yeah, I'll put it in.
You can put it on. It's like got, you know, how are you going? So there's like, you know, between, there's a spectrum of between well and unwell.
Hmm. Is that from the government? Is that the New South Wales initiative?
Yeah, I think it's rural and remote mental health
centre.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like, how are you feeling? I'm well. What's your stress level? Coping well. So, but it's on a spectrum.
You just go through it. Yeah.
What's your outlook? Positive outlook. How are you working? Yeah. And so then it goes.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of numbers there too if you.
Great. Would you say shame was one factor that stopped you from seeking help or not? Do you think it affects, do you think people feel that taboo around mental health is still there, or has it evaporated?
I think the stigma around mental health is still there.
Mm.
I think it's slowly kind of becoming more common, especially when, you know, high profile people like, you know, put out. Just saw that guy who hosts The Bachelor. What's his name? He's just said that he has experienced mental health issues and written a book about it.
Actually, I did.
Usher.
I don't know Usher.
Anyway, he.
I actually was given this for my birthday, a magazine, a goodie bag from a friend, and there's a whole section actually on women that have had anxiety issues.
Really? Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Depression and anxiety is actually the most common mental health issue. Mm. And
yeah, all these women.
Wow.
Sam Frost, Sarah Jane Clark, Jacinta Franklin. She's a model.
Yeah.
Sarah Wilson, Juanita Phillips. Yeah, but it's just nice to know
that there's other
people. You're not alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a thing too, like, to know that you're not alone and to, like, not think to yourself, it's just me, you know, like.
And I can't tell anyone because what will they think of me?
Yeah, yeah. No, to seek help, to speak out, to talk. Like, just talk to a friend, talk to your doctor, talk to your husband.
Yeah.
Just to, share with how you're going.
Yeah. They say here, feeling anxious, slow breathing, does that help?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So our brain. If we even just sit for 2 minutes and do deep breathing, the regular breathing of our diaphragm actually causes our brain to go from the flight or fight, which means that you're ready for action and ready to kill, to calm and relaxed.
Mm-hmm. So just 2 minutes. As you think it is, it actually works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So slow breathing is the first one. Stay in the present moment. How do you do that?
So even when you're cutting vegetables, changing nappies, be there. Be where you are.
What you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm cutting vegetables instead of thinking a million other things.
It helps you to be present, and it helps your mind to not race and to not think about all the things that you have to do or you haven't done or whatever. It helps you just to be in the moment.
Just focus on healthy lifestyle, so keeping active, eating well, experiencing nature, spending time with family and friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
4, challenging your self-talk. Is that like the negative kind of?
Yeah. Yeah. So like I'm never going to be, you know.
I'll never get over this. I'm never good enough.
My house is too hard. My house is always messy.
Yeah.
My kids are always misbehaving.
Yeah.
That kind of global, it's called global thinking. So when you think that everything is a certain way, it means that you're starting to, you need either challenging yourself or having having someone else challenge it for you and say, well, actually, you know, you've only had 2 hours sleep for the last 5 nights. Don't worry about the kids. Don't worry about the house. You know, like.
I think I actually went mad for a moment once. This was after, I think it was my 4th baby. was it Charlotte? No, it was the 5th. I got MRSA on my finger from a shopping trolley. And I had a brand new baby. I had 4 other kids. They told me I had this staph infection, a super bug, right?
From a shopping trolley.
Yep. I had pricked my finger I was sewing a button on one of the kids' uniforms the night before and stabbed myself with it, went and did the shopping. And I kid you not, I could literally feel my fingers swelling. Oh, here comes Charlie.
Here comes Harry. Yeah. Hello.
Yeah, put it there. And I developed this, like, within 4 days my finger was twice the size and it was ridiculous. And I went to the doctor. Wow. So I was I cut my finger. I got onto Dr. Google, so they said you've got a staph, MRSA. I got home, and she seemed really nonchalant about it. I thought, oh, what's that? Don't know. She said, oh, you can't take normal antibiotics because your body won't respond to them. I went home, I was just Googling it, and I thought, oh, and then I got onto these forums of all these people that are dying, you know. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to infect my whole entire family. So then I just went into survivor mode and I was cleaning everything. I know I shouldn't say this because docs might knock on my door, but I bathed the baby, or I bathed the children in Domestos and the baby.
Gosh.
Yep. I made the kids take their uniforms off at the front door. They weren't allowed to walk in with germs. And it wasn't until my husband said to me, probably 3 weeks later, what are you doing? You're turning into this person that we both know. I won't say her name. And it was that flicked a switch and I thought, oh, yeah, this is a bit – I am going a bit crazy here. So then I had to, you know,
reassess. So the thing is that, like, that could have become something pathological. Like, that could have become like a full-on anxiety disorder if you'd let it continue.
Yeah.
So having someone say no – and just kind of redirect your thoughts.
This isn't normal behavior So, I mean, that was so important for him to say that to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And now I can laugh about it. But back then it was no joke. No. I thought I had to clean the family because I was going to kill them with my
MRSA, your golden staff.
Which apparently is quite common. But
it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's self-talk. And then the last one, they say, be kind to yourself. Remember that you're not your anxiety. You are not weak. You are not inferior. You have a mental health condition and it's called anxiety. And that's it. It's nothing other than that. Like, it doesn't make you less of a person.
No, that's right. Yeah. So, and the self-care, that just comes back to what we were talking about before about making time for yourself.
Hmm.
And I really admire you, Jess, because you really make time to go and do your daily workout.
Yeah.
Your big...
It's not fun. I don't go... You know, high-fiving in the air, but I have to do it for my just to clear my head
And have that time where it's just you
challenging yourself
thrashing your body away.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
but it doesn't have to be that. It can be just a walk.
No,
just breathe in that air, look at the birds.
So you were saying something that brings you joy.
I'll go first.
Okay.
Well, I have prolific iceberg roses that are just...
Oh, they look stunning.
Yeah, they're beautiful. I put a picture up on my personal Instagram account yesterday because they just bring me so much joy. They look beautiful. They smell beautiful. And the more you cut, the more you get.
They're beautiful. They're just stunning. We're looking at a big bunch of them now.
Yeah, they're lovely.
Sitting on the bench.
And what's brought you joy this week?
So at dinner time we always have... what we call highs and lows.
Hmm.
So I always love hearing about, you know, the adventures the kids have been up to and, you know, what they've been doing and nothing in particular, but we just try and have that habit of kind of checking in and, you know, there are some who in the family who try to dominate and they want to say every single little thing that happened in their day.
Do they get limits?
They do get limits. They do get limits, but it's good. And then you got to coax the quieter ones to be a bit more forthcoming. But, yeah, I like hearing about that. I like hearing about the kids and what they've been up to.
That's so important.
Yeah, well, thanks for...
Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story.
Thanks, Jess.
Because it's a story of not only vulnerability, but it's of hope and triumph. Mm. Look at you.
Oh, thanks, Jess.
And it's a story of faith.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. God is God. If you doubt that God is with you, he is with you, even if you don't feel it.
Yeah, I know. I was watching Sunset. I don't know whether I said it on the podcast last time, but I was at the kitchen window watching the sunset, and there you see where the light touches the dark.
Mm.
And I just thought, in those dark places, when there is light shined on it, it makes it so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing so dark that can't receive the light.
Mm.
And when we put light, shine light on it, it just opens up and and it can bring so much beauty, even though it's painful.
Yeah, yeah. And God uses all things. Yeah. So, yeah.
Thank you.
No worries.
Thank you so much.
No worries.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend or rate us on iTunes. Every little bit helps. It helps getting the word out there and it helps other women. Have a great week.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.